All right, 7:15, and got that tropical system. I don't even know if it's appropriate to call it that yet, but something going on in the Gulf, and I don't think it's going to really turn into much other than a rainmaker. Could be a named storm. We're watching all of that for you, specifically Peyton Malone and the WWL forecast team. So, yeah, we'll let you know everything you need to know. But as it stands now, looking like maybe some increased chances for rain as we move toward the weekend. Eugene Green joins us now, New Orleans City Council member. How are you, sir?
Talk to you and to your listeners.
Thank you, sir. It's good to have you. Let me ask you about with this storm coming up and the surge and water board and turbines and this and that and the other thing. I know you're not council at large, but thoughts on everything with the transition, I guess, with Ghassan Korban leaving and the power station and everything else that's going on with the surge and water board?
Well, the power station is under construction right now, so there'll be a new source of power. There'll be more reliability. We won't have to rely so much on just these old turbines and the way that they were, powered up. Mm-hmm. But the bottom line is, I just want to encourage everybody to just always be prepared. Expect the worst. Expect that there's going to be flooding. Expect that the power is going to go out. Expect that the drains aren't going to be able to take all of the water. And just be prepared. This is the season, and hurricane season, really. Most of the hurricanes are in August or even September. We think about it because hurricane season starts in May. But at the end of the day, there's a hurricane that really takes place many times in the month of August. And just be prepared. Assume that it's going to happen. Have the plan for evacuation. Have the plan in place if you're going to stay. If you're going to have a generator, make sure it's working right. It's far enough away from your house. But just be prepared because the Sewage and Water Board nor the city nor other agencies can handle the worst cases well, which is too much rain coming down in too short a period of time. And also you can just assume that the power is going to go out. Hopefully it stays on, but just assume the worst. That's all, Tommy.
Let's talk about the settlement, the $90 million that the city owes and so forth. How, Eugene, and look, let's leave personalities out of this because I know you don't like to do that, and I don't blame you. It's about the government and the city functioning and doing what they're supposed to do. How did the city get to owing $90 million in back judgments, and how do you fix it?
The city simply didn't pay its judgments for years. We have people who've been on the list to collect over a decade, and we simply didn't pay. I just can't describe it to you other than this council, for the first time, put aside some money, which was about $6 million a year for a couple of years to pay, but it would have been impossible to get to the end. And all of these are paying judgments that have been decided in court. The appeals processes are over. And people were just awaiting the money because they were owed it based on our court system. We're paying $90 million in judgments so that we can get the people who are owed paid because it's a matter of fairness. It wasn't ever going to go away. So the bottom line is that we're selling bonds as a city so that we have a yearly obligation, but the people who are owed money get paid.
I think what makes me scratch my head about that is, you know, we're not talking about a guy that or a woman that you know, is irresponsible and doesn't conduct their affairs like they should. And yeah, okay, you sue me, fine. It's a wallpaper judgment. You're not going to get a dime out of me. This is city government we're talking about. So there was no more appeal pending or anything else. It's like it was flat out clear night and day. You owe the money. And at some point, the city or whomever just decided not to pay it?
That's one of those instances where when people joke and say, you can't sue City Hall, you can't beat City Hall. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, you can get a judgment, but you can't really force City Hall to write a check. I mean, mm-hmm. A court is not going to say, take it out of this source, take it away from recreation, take it away from health care, take it away from the police, and pay a judgment. So the bottom line is that the city could go on forever because they were never going to get those kind of judgments against them in terms of forcing them to pay. We really had an obligation to pay the people for a very long period of time. It's almost been the source of a joke, you know, that, oh, man, you can expect that you're not going to get paid by the city. Go on and sue. But if you owed something, if there's been an injury, even a financial injury because of something that the city did wrong, if you owed it, you should be paid. And this city council has finally said, okay, enough. We're not going to just continue to accumulate judgments and not pay people. We're going to sell bonds. And in the long run, the city is going to be better off because of it.
You're a smart guy, well-educated man, been around. Is this uncommon when it comes to city governments doing this? Is this naturally New Orleans? I hate to say that, but...
Well, I think that it, as I looked at it, a lot of other cities do the same thing because, very honestly, each year you want a budget according to your needs, and that includes roads, that includes health, that includes recreation, that includes cutting the trees, that includes cleaning the drains and things like that. Those are immediate obligations. It's easy to ignore people who have a judgment against you because when you pay that judgment, it doesn't get you a city service. It gets you paying somebody back who's owed money. And I think that's what we just looked at. It was hard to, as a city official, to say, you know something, we're going to pay something that's due in the past when we have all these obligations in front of us. But it was just time. I mean, this city council has done a few things in the midst of some of the challenges that we've had to overcome. And one of those things was to pay off those people who were paid. It was kind of like relocating people from Gordon Plaza. We just kept pushing it down the road year after year after year, and we got it done. And now all the residents of Gordon Plaza have been relocated from that dump.
Finally.
This is something that just needed to happen. Finally is right.
Finally. All right, let's take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. We're going to talk about illegal dumping when we return. Eugene Green, our guest, New Orleans City Council member, 720 and a half. Time now, traffic, WWL. 725, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Eugene Green, New Orleans City Council member, about this and that. We've already talked about back judgments and $90 million that the city's finally going to pony up to those that have, I guess, earned it in court, if you want to say it that way, or won their case in court. Eugene, a long time, for a long time, we've been talking about illegal dumping in the city. To me, the mindset of this, you know, I always say nothing just happens, right? Whether it's a PTA meeting or whatever it is, somebody has to set up the chairs, somebody has to bake the cookies for the bake sale. Nothing just happens. But on the negative side of that, if you're going to dump something somewhere, somebody's going to have to pick that up. So I never did quite get the mindset there. A lot of people are irresponsible. Tell me what's going on with illegal dumping in the city and what's changed as far as enforcement, fines, penalties, et cetera.
Tommy, it's sometimes it's interestingly enough hard to grasp what's going on because it is so simple. There are criminals who have simply been paid to haul away matter and to haul away goods and to haul away refuse properly by people such as landlords, by people such as those who own tire shops, by people who have needs to have something hauled away, and they simply don't want to spend the money that they've made. They don't want to spend any portion of it, and so they find a dark area off of some street or some neighborhood, maybe under the interstate or something like that, where they can get away with it, and they dump. But yesterday, for example, it's interesting that I'm talking to you today. Yesterday morning at 9 a.m., well, at 8 a.m., I got a call saying that someone had dumped something illegally off Dalman Road on a street that's between Dalman Road and the post office. And the people in the post office couldn't get out. So federal officials were prohibited.
Really?
Because that's right. That's right. A load of tires was on a street. It's a real street. And it was left there, and the members of the Postal Service could not get out. Now, I will tell you, people don't see this much because our sanitation department does it every day. They got out there and were able to pick up the scores of tires in a short period of time. But I'm asking for a federal investigation because there's a law against blocking access to a federal facility. I'm asking the city of New Orleans to do its work in terms of the police tracking the cameras to find out who it is. But that's how bad it is. People just dump wherever they think that they can. And I say people, I'm talking about the criminals, not people in general.
Right.
Because interestingly enough, most things you can get picked up in front of your house. You can get four tires picked up in front of your house every week. You can get everything that's left outside and furniture and the like. No, these are criminals who have been paid for their work and they don't want to do the right thing. So now, Tommy, there were three arrests last week. There were three arrests. Unfortunately, people were coming from Slidell and from Gretna to do that dumping, but they did get caught. There are 13 investigations right now, so anybody who wants to illegally dump needs to know that there are investigations. Yesterday's incident is going to be investigated, and I'm asking the federal government, who is listening to us, that we need your help because a lot of the dumping is done by people from other states, so that becomes interstate commerce. And also you saw yesterday that federal workers were prohibited from getting out to do their job of delivering mail because of the dumping of those tires. It's a serious problem. we're cracking down a little bit more. The biggest thing is it's going to take penalties, and it's going to take finding people and enforcing those penalties, charging them with the maximum charge once they're caught, not just something, a slap on the wrist, because it costs the city millions of dollars per year to remove litter and the product of illegal dumping.
Well, I got to tell you, I didn't realize that. Maybe I'm naive, but I didn't realize that it had become a cottage industry of people. Yeah, I'll haul it away for you. And obviously there's no expense involved for them. You know, just dump it wherever they find it. And that's why it's so important that the arrests are made and follow up, you know, happens with the conviction and penalties, et cetera. Is there anything the council can do by ordinance to stiffen penalties on that, Councilman?
Well, there are ordinances in place that suggest that your vehicle can be removed, that you can be imprisoned. The bottom line is that at the end of the day, once they're caught and the police will do the job of catching them, just as they're doing with these 13 investigations, the penalties need to be enforced to the maximum extent. Now, that involves the court system, the district attorney, and the like. But the bottom line is that I think that the ordinances are in place to make the penalty severe enough. We've just got to catch more people and to enforce them.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate your time. Eugene Green, New Orleans City Council member. I'm going to tell y'all what, don't screw around with a post office or mailing or anything else like that, because you open yourself to a world of hurt. We'll take a break, come back, talk with the president of the Public Affairs Research Council about the ethics board and changes to the ethics laws in Louisiana. Right now, though, we pause for WWL First News. Right, 7:45, quarter till 8. I'm a West Banker, so to me, everything's across the river. So don't go by me. But just to be clear on the traffic, I got a text that says the St. Claude Bridge is open, Claiborne is out, the Sieber Bridge is out, not St. Claude. I just drove over it. If that makes sense to y'all, again, I'm a West Banker and everything's across the river to me. Stephen Procopio joins us now, president of the Public Affairs Research Council, to talk about ethics laws. How you doing, Stephen?
Great.
I see a story here by a friend, David Hammer, from WWL Louisiana, that you told him that this change in the ethics law tips the scales far too much in favor of making it difficult to enforce the ethics code. I presume you were quoted accurately?
Yes. I'd have to know when it was, because there were a lot of changes that went through that bill from its beginning. And at its beginning, it was awful.
But
to where it is now.
I'm sorry. So, tell me how we wound up. That's the most important part of it. Although, you know, you don't know what's going to happen next session. But tell me where we are now and what changed, I guess, is what people need to know.
Sure. Now, to be clear, it's like a 40-page bill. So there's a lot of changes in there, and some of which I actually think are fine. They actually gave people that are accused of ethics complaints, they give them a lot more information and let them see, you know, the charges, and they also the people can make a statement, which actually what ethics told us is that they're all doing that already. So this is essentially putting into law some standard practices. There can be more reporting. So there are lots of things that I think are either fine or actually good. Mm-hmm. The issue is then there's just a lot of exceptions that were added, and the whole system I'm a little worried about. You know, so for example, there are things I'll call normal exceptions. Like they added the racing commission can essentially, even though they have horses that are racing in there that they have an interest in, can be on the racing commission that oversees, you know, the horse races, which seems like a conflict of interest. In fact, the ethics board told them the conflict of interest, so they went to the board of to the legislature and got it changed.
Wait, go back and say that again, because you're talking about here not just, you know, not just a business endeavor, but a business endeavor upon which you can wager. And I'm not casting aspersions at anybody, but just it's early. Go back and tell people what changed again with the Racing Commission.
Sure. So you can be a member of the Racing Commission, but also have horses that are racing. So you have a vested interest. You could have. I'm not saying you do.
Right, you could.
But you could have a conflict of interest in terms of, hey, I have to regulate this thing that I also, you know, partake in, which is a conflict of interest. And the Board of Ethics told them it was a conflict of interest. And they just went to the legislature and got it changed. But that is just one small part of the
bill. You confused me with they got it changed, meaning now you can. They didn't change it for the good, good being a relative term.
Right.
They changed it so that you can be a member of the commission and have an interest in the horse or whatever it is.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's unfortunately not atypical, the type of things that can be changed. You know, that is obviously a move in the wrong direction. But compared to what was proposed, it's not existential. This will be a problem, and hopefully we can find ways to make it work. But
give me a couple more for instances, if you can, Stephen.
There was something else allowing someone else from the to be added to the convention center, but it was very specific in what you had to work at the convention center, the New Orleans Convention Center, for for a certain number of years and essentially be named, Steve. I don't know who the person is, but there was clearly a person that was working at the convention center and had interest, and let them put back on there. I don't know who that person is. That one is so narrowly tailored. It's not as bad as the Racing Commission one. But in the more important issues are sort of the more systemic issues about investigation and what's being allowed and subpoenas, that this is a lot harder to do the work of the ethics board.
All right, let me tell you what. I think that would be a good point to stop, and we'll pick it up with subpoenas and investigations and talk about why. And one concern I have, Stephen, is that as we do everything we can to try to make taxes simpler and a more friendly business environment, Louisiana used to have the reputation of business leaders would say, you go everywhere, you got to grease some palms. But Louisiana, it's crazy. It's ridiculous. Everybody has a handout. And I think the last thing in the world from a business development standpoint we want is that reputation. Stephen Procopio, our guest president of the Public Affairs Research Council, will pick up the changes in the ethics laws with subpoenas and investigations when we come back. 7:50, 10 till 8, traffic now, WWL. 7:56, 4 till 8, never enough time in the morning. Stephen Procopio, our guest president of the Public Affairs Research Council, talking about the ethics regulations and the weakening that happened with the session that's just concluded. Stephen, you were talking about subpoenas, I think it was, and investigations. Go ahead, please.
Right, sure. So to understand how the process works, there is a complaint that's made, and then after that, they can choose, the board can choose to do an investigation. And then if they determine that the investigation has found something, they'll send that on to a separate body, the Ethics Adjudicatory Board, which is a sort of independent administrator that looks at it. And then they will render equivalency of a verdict. This whole thing has to kind of happen within a year. So some of the changes that were made, I said some of them are good, but there are also some ways to sort of delay it. We're using the subpoena and the extra subpoena abilities that now someone will have, so essentially to try and run out the clock. Now, I don't know that it's going to happen in every instance, and I think hopefully that will be efficient. And they also have ways to extend that. So I think what will probably happen, you'll see a lot of extensions, but what I want to make sure everyone's aware of when you see like a story that says, ethics board asking for a lot of extensions, that there's a reason for that, because we're going to need that to make sure bad actors don't extend the clock.
Go ahead.
Because otherwise you could just, it's not like a regular criminal trial where it's like you can go on and whatever it is. It's like there's a limit to how long you can have an ethics investigation.
So I'm reading from David Hammer's story here. Every person who is the subject of an investigation could simply file a request for advisory opinion, and that would stop an investigation. It's a get away with it card. Talk about that, if you would, Stephen.
Yeah. There's an additional language that they added and that says you can ask for an advisory opinion from the Board of Ethics. So you're about to do something like, hey, if I take this action, if I hire this person, if I enter in this contract, you're concerned maybe this is going to be a violation of the ethics code. So you will ask for an advisory opinion and they'll send it back to you. And they're like, yes, this would be a problem, or no, it's fine, or maybe under these conditions. What this new law says is that an advisory opinion cannot be used as sort of evidence against someone. Because the problem is sometimes people will ask for an advisory opinion for something they're already doing and say, hey, I'm doing this. Is this right? And then they can have the board tell them, no, that wasn't right. And there's a little bit of a tension here because you have someone that may be under the current law really trying to figure out what they're doing is wrong so they can fix it. But sometimes the advisory board will be like, well, no, and not only that, we're not going to investigate you. And I can kind of see complaints there. It's like, well, why are you going to investigate someone that was trying to find out what's going on? The problem with putting in the law is that there are concerns, and I have these concerns, that you're doing something wrong, you ask for an advisory opinion, and you say, well, you can't investigate me because I asked for an advisory opinion, and that's how the law reads now. So there is a potential concern that people could use this as a shield, again, if you're a bad actor, to block it, which is a shame because we want people to get advisory opinions to know if they're doing the right thing or not. That should be encouraged. But on the other hand, I do have some worries that this is going to be used as sort of a mechanism to actually stop investigating.
Thank you, Stephen. You have to come back.